Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. Lee, you ready for this?
I am excited.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun segment. Please join me in welcoming back to the Business Radio X microphone, president and co-owner of Kirkpatrick Partners, Miss Wendy Kirkpatrick. How you doing?
I'm great. So happy to be back.
So, Wendy, can you talk a little bit about Kirkpatrick Partners? How are you serving folks?
Sure. We work most usually with training professionals and human resource professionals, and we help them to design training that actually delivers business value and increases performance. And, you know, really the key to that is starting with a solid plan.
So you use the word actually. Is that an unusual thing? Sometimes they don't care about performance and that things actually working.
Well, I did use the word actually, and sadly, I think every training and human resources professional out there cares about what they do, but I think they're misinformed or uninformed, because statistically, if you attended training tomorrow, you would probably be likely to retain only 15% and use 15% of it. So when you start to spread that out over a bigger population, 15% return isn't so strong.
But that's kind of across industry, across different types of training.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It really doesn't matter what type of training, what type of industry. Study after study, decade after decade has yielded that same statistic.
And then just the industry has accepted that as okay?
You know, I don't think it's been accepted, but I think what happens is people get busy and they keep doing what they've always done. And really, training needs to reinvent itself and change its role and realize the role of training is not simply to deliver content. Rather, it's to create a strong plan so that content that's delivered actually gets applied on the job and turns into business results. So it's changing the perspective. Instead of focusing on the training event, it's really more of a process over time, preparing people to learn, helping them to learn, and then helping them to apply what they did learn on the job.
And then really hold yourself accountable to the outcome?
Well, accountability is a really good word, Lee, I've got to say. And I think that's probably where the breakdown occurs, because you know what? Accountability is not fun. This is not really something we, you laugh, right? But this is true, right? I mean, think about everyday examples. A great one is health. We all know what we need to do to be healthy, right? But then why are so many of us not exercising, eating our vegetables, drinking our water, getting 8 hours of sleep a night? Because it's not that fun.
Right.
So the accountability piece is really the key, and it's not the fun part.
So what just stood out for me in that part of the conversation, you said preparing people to learn. I wonder if that sounds like a step I would skip, not on purpose. Ah. But I wonder if that doesn't happen a lot, that we don't go to the effort of actually preparing people to learn.
You know, really good observation, Stone. And think about it this way. If you have a leadership development program, could everybody involved in this program at the inception be able to answer this one simple question? What do you want these leaders to do as a result of participating in the program? You would be shocked how often you get silence, a blank stare, or maybe five different answers, because there isn't clarity on literally what are people supposed to do as a result of the training.
So not defining the outcome they desire, and then they begin training. So I don't even understand how that can happen.
Oh, and it happens every day. Imagine if you were headed to work, but they changed the location of your office.
And didn't tell you,
and you didn't have the address. So your GPS address is nothing.
Right.
You'd probably find it eventually, right?
I hope so.
Some people would make it to work, but most people wouldn't make it to work. And if they did, they'd probably be late. And it's the same with the training. Believe it or not, people put together fantastic programs, they think, and invest millions of dollars and hundreds of hours without the simple answer to the question, but what are people supposed to do after training?
And then your firm, how do you kind of get into the mix? How do you help them? Do you help them at every aspect of this, of defining, okay, these are the outcomes, and then holding them accountable to achieving that at every step of the way? Like, where do you guys play?
Well, the Kirkpatrick model really outlines those steps at level four results. You start by defining what is the outcome that we're looking for? What's most important to our organization, and how would this particular program contribute right. meaningfully to that?
Like, how do we know when to high five? Isn't that an important part of this?
I love that. I am so going to borrow that statement. I love that. Yes, that's exactly
it. It might have to be level five, though, to match a high five, or is level five something else?
We don't have a five.
Oh, there you go. Level high five.
I like that. After level four, there's a high five. Yeah. So once you're clear on where you're trying to go, what you're trying to do, when to high five, then the next step is, so very literally in observable and measurable terms, what will get us there? Mm-hmm. What do people need to do? And how will we know if they're doing it? And then there's that important accountability. Right. How do we reinforce when they do that, encourage them, reward them when we see it, and hold them accountable and correct them when we don't see it?
And then is that talking about the compliance element of it to make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing? Because like you do, training sometimes is an event and it happens and then it's gone and then the trainers leave and then you know, you hope that the people have absorbed it, the 15% of it, and then they're actually, you know, using what they learn.
Well, Lee, you've said something very interesting there. You call it the training event. And one of the key things we are really trying to encourage training professionals to see is that training should be a process, not an event, mm-hmm. because the event will get exactly what you said. People come, it's fun. They might even be really inspired by it. But the reality is they go back to their everyday work, and they get busy. They mm-hmm. forget. No one reminds them. No one holds them accountable for it. So guess what? It fades away and becomes maybe that 15%.
That's why there's so many diet books, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
If one of them worked, there'd only be one diet book.
Right. Right. And you know what? We probably don't even need a book. We just need to hold ourselves accountable.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you find that training professionals in general, do they embrace this idea of measurement, or do they find it a little intimidating maybe sometimes and maybe not, you know, really want to tread carefully when it comes to this business of evaluation, particularly capturing data that I'm then going to be asked to share with the lines of business?
Mm-hmm. I think you're right, Stone, that I think a lot of training professionals are rather intimidated and they simply don't think they know what to do. And I think part of it is there's certainly some models out there that are rather complex, and that I think creates that intimidation. So what we teach is that it's really not complex or difficult. It is just a matter of creating the plan and then working the plan.
Now, when you're working with a firm and you're kind of giving, it sounds like a little bit of tough love here, because they might be doing something in the past that they thought was fine, and maybe they're not getting the results that they would like. And they thought, you know, we're going to hire these Kirkpatrick folks and they're going to fix this and they'll tweak something. But it sounds like you're kind of saying, look, you got to look at this through fresh eyes. And really, this is not a simple kind of glossing over stuff. We're going to really dig in deep and we're going to really hold each other accountable and things like that. And that might not be something that the client wants to hear all the time, or at least the people that are doing the work, the training. Because mm-hmm. this sounds like, look, it's holding someone accountable sounds good for you, but for me, I don't want any of that on me.
Exactly. And I think at the end of the day, what we have to remember is everybody wants to do well. So we really view it as an educational process where we bring the ideas and the tools. And when we work with a client, what we try to help them to do is build a plan so they can do this. So it isn't the Kirkpatricks coming in and holding them compliant. Rather, we are helping them to build their own compliance and accountability model, and they assign themselves roles. Mm-hmm. So we check back with them. That's part of the accountability. But ultimately, we want to teach them to do this on their own. So we don't have to come in and be the parent, if you will.
Right.
Really, they need to take responsibility for it themselves.
All right. In defense of these trainers, because I'm jumping on them a little bit, but really these questions that have to be answered. Where are we going? How are we going to know if we're getting there? The lines of business, those people need to be answering those questions, not the training person, right?
Exactly. So the communication between training and the business it serves is really the first step to this. And, you know, what that brings to light is a common challenge that training professionals have where they say, bring it on. I want to have that conversation, but I can't get them to answer my call, or they keep canceling my meeting.
You're the trainer, just handle it. They really do run into that sometimes, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think really the advice there for training professionals is brush up on your business acumen. Make sure you're speaking a language that interests your business partner and makes them want to have a conversation with you. Because if you come in talking about training this, training that, skills gaps, lots of jargon, you know what? I don't have time for that if I'm running my business. But if that training professional comes to me and says, now, what are your key business metrics you're trying to hit this quarter or this year? And what challenges are you having in doing that? Okay, this is a completely different conversation.
Right. And if I don't have that conversation and that relationship and factor that into the curricula, the instructional design, I mean, I might put on a marvelous sales training class or leadership class, and then they're going to go back and the execs are going to untrain them quicker than I can train them. So, right?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, we've worked with so many frustrated training professionals who are in that pattern where they say, well, this executive told me to create training. So I did, but we're not sure what they want. So we're just kind of throwing everything in there and hoping something in the end is what he or she wanted. Well, what a monumental waste of time, money, and resources. Yeah. And the problem is, you know, they say, well, at least, hey, I've still got a job. I'm still training, but you just have to wonder how long you can sustain that.
Well, yeah. And it can be a kind of a soul sucking existence if it keeps happening over and over, right? You're putting your heart and soul into this and not getting those kind of results. All right. I got to know, do you just have scar tissue? What compelled you to get in this line of work? What's the backstory on you?
Well, interestingly enough, I was one of those business professionals that didn't have a lot of respect for training. I was a product manager for a consumer products company, and we were rolling out a new product line that was really critically important to obviously not just my department, but the whole company. And I met with the person in human resources who was supposed to help us with the training. And she was asking me these questions that I didn't feel like answering. Want to guess what she was asking me? What are people supposed to do after training? And I thought, well, this is the silliest question I've ever heard. And so, you know, we got in a hurry on our timeline. So I created the training myself. Well, it didn't go so well. People didn't really do what we wanted them to do. And about the time that this occurred, an opportunity came up for me to have a hybrid job, half training and half product management.
Interesting.
And I thought, well, how great. Maybe I can be part of the solution. That's when I realized I didn't know a whole lot about training. And I had the opportunity to hear Jim Kirkpatrick and this thing called the Kirkpatrick model. And I thought, light bulb. I totally get it now. And so I started following the model, and guess what? My training started to work. And so then I had so much respect for training that I transitioned 100% over to training because I saw the unbelievable opportunity there is for everyone if they use good principles in their training to revolutionize the business they do.
And is that where you kind of came to the point of the trainer has to be able to go kind of head-to-head, peer-to-peer with the person who wants the training to push back and say, look, tell me what you're trying to accomplish here so they can work as a partnership and not just like, here, fix this thing. And I'm not going to tell you the details, just figure it out.
That's a great phrase, peer-to-peer. I mean, that captures it for me, right? If you're going to be effective, you have to have that kind of peer relationship.
It can't be like you're subservient to the person who wants what they want. You have to be kind of on the same level in order to get the respect so that you can kind of ascertain what exactly are they trying to accomplish so I can help them get to where they want to go.
That's a really good observation. And many training professionals have told me they feel a bit intimidated, particularly if it's someone that is truly at a higher level than them. For example, an executive who basically issues a training mandate. But I was at a conference yesterday and a training professional from Canada was chatting with me after the program. And she was in that very same situation where she was just getting training orders and she would take the orders and she would deliver it. And she said, you know, I read your book, Training on Trial. And I said, I'm going to try to do this. And she was scared. But she had a meeting with an executive who gave her the training order. And she said, I'm going to ask some of these questions. And I'm going to basically, in effect, say no to a training request that didn't make sense. He was just asking for some training and had no particular purpose or outcome in mind. And she said, she ultimately said, I respectfully don't want to create this training for you because you're not going to get what you think you're going to get out of it. And she said, there was a scary moment of silence in the room. But she said, since then, she said, you won't believe it. Now we have conversations. We're together. We create meaningful training that actually does produce business results that we can document. And then she said something really amazing. She said, and I got my life back. I said, what do you mean? She said, I was killing myself creating program after program after program, and none of it was really working. So then that generated even more training requests. So she said, I got out of this cycle of producing meaningless training, and now we work together to produce training that does work. So there's less of it, and it works better.
It's Stone uses this phrase quite a bit. He's like, a lot of times people say, bring me a rock, and you don't know what the rock is. So a lot of times the executive's saying, give me training. And in their head, they have some vision of what they'd like at the end of the day. And the training professional's going out there just scrambling to give them a rock because they said training and they don't know exactly what they're trying to. Now this, if you can be partners and work arm in arm, you have a better chance of coming up with a solution that's going to benefit the company and everybody.
Exactly. And when you create that solution that does benefit the company, that executive is going to answer your call.
Right.
And is going to keep the meeting with you because they know you are their partner in creating success and results. You're not just some silly training person who plays games and
makes
up programs.
And they're just checking off a box that, yeah, we did training check, then, you know.
Exactly.
So now that's part of what you're bringing to the table when you're working with clients, right? Is bringing this process in place so that you get more effective training. And so at the end of the day, the executives are getting the outcome they desire.
Exactly. And one good outcome leads to the next good outcome. So if there's anyone out there listening going, oh yeah, fantastic, Wendy, I'd love to do that, but you know, I just can't make it happen. You just have to find that one open door. Mm-hmm. Find that one manager, supervisor, or executive where you can have this conversation with them and they're receptive. They kind of get it. Do this with them. Ask the questions. Figure out what really needs to happen in the workplace. Focus the training and more specifically, the follow-up and reinforcement on that. Create a success story. And you know what? You're not going to have to tell the success story. That business partner is going to tell it for you.
Right.
And that's what turns it around and makes this happen.
Now, does this system or process work with things that don't have like kind of clear results or financial kind of metrics? Like you go, I want people to listen better or things that are more soft skills. Can you build process around things that aren't kind of as crystal clear in terms of defining what a win looks like?
Sure. And honestly, Lee, in that case, I think it's even more critically important. You know, you mentioned listening. So if you came to me and said, hey, Wendy, I want you to create a training module because I need my employees to be better listeners. The first thing I would ask you is, what prompts you to ask for something like this? Because underlying every training request, there's some kind of problem that someone wants to solve. Interestingly, though, often the details of that problem aren't expressed. So maybe what it is this particular supervisor, maybe it's you, thinks my employees aren't listening because they're making a lot of mistakes and those mistakes are costing us money because we're having to do a lot of rework. Okay, so now we're getting somewhere. Now we know the issue is instructions either aren't being absorbed or aren't being followed. Okay, fine. So now what we get to is, well, what is causing that disconnect to happen? Maybe you need to interview a couple of people, find out what's really happening that's causing this disconnect where people aren't getting or aren't following the instructions. Okay, now we're getting to something that I can document. So is it that they have the instructions, but they aren't following them? Or is it that the instructions are confusing or maybe don't even exist at all? Okay, now I'm getting to something tangible that I can figure out what to do. Then that's going to lead me to, so what is that behavior that people need to be performing on the job to fix the problem? Maybe it's that they need to follow the instructions and maybe they need to be in the form of a checklist. Maybe someone needs to work with them then and see that they're checking the boxes and actually following the steps. So, you know, these are ways then that you can bring this to life and make it something observable and measurable, even if it isn't necessarily something specifically tied to money or financials.
But an important component is some sort of a dashboard or some scorecard to keep track of things.
A scorecard is a great way to do it because, you know what, we all understand that when you go to a sporting event, you know the score. Mm-hmm. If you bring that concept into the workplace, it can be incredibly effective for all the same reasons because we can all see what's going on.
And there is clarity. There isn't that ambiguous, well, I thought I did a great job. Everybody, mm-hmm. you know, said they smiled when I, you know, they laughed at all my jokes. So it had to be good.
So we've been talking so far in the context of kind of a corporate environment where there's a hierarchy, but it strikes me that all the disciplines that we're talking about exercising here have equal, if not greater, application for the individual practitioner that's out in the field and maybe they really know their craft and they are charged with the responsibility of transferring their expertise, providing their counsel. And if they don't exercise some of these disciplines we're talking about, they could either A, not provide the value that they could and should, or even if they do, not be able to demonstrate and articulate the value of what they provided. I don't know, that's the Stone theory. Is there any merit to any of that?
There is, Stone. About 7 years ago, I put together a program that exactly follows what you're saying, that we talk about the Kirkpatrick model in relation to training, but it can apply to anything in life. When I wake up in the morning as a business owner and I give myself that 1 8-minute snooze when I hit the button on the top of my clock radio, the first thing my mind goes to is, what is the most important thing I need to accomplish today? My level 4 result. And then I think, so what specific things do I need to make sure I am doing today to make sure that happens? That's my level 3. And then my level 2 is, do I have all the parts and pieces that I am going to need to be able to accomplish this? You know, do I need to look something up and figure it out? Do I need to refer to something? Do I know how to do this? And then my level 1, is my environment going to be correct for this? And the way that translates in my world is I look at my calendar and I say, wow, if I have back-to-back meetings all day, but what I really need to do is get an article written, I need to make a change. So I live these 4 levels before I even really fully wake up in the morning.
So they transcend business. It affects you as an individual.
Yeah. You know, the thing that's so fantastic about the model is it is really very simple and intuitive because it does apply to anything. Now, that doesn't mean that it's easy because we need to hold ourselves accountable to do it, but it really is that simple. It can apply to anything.
Now, in the companies you work with, what is the pain that they're having where they're like, you know what, we should call the Kirkpatrick folks?
You know, the one that makes me the saddest, and this happens every now and then, is someone will call and say something like, well, we have a $2 million leadership development program, and we are so proud of it. We put so much into this. It's 3 years. All of our high potential leaders are in it. So we're in year 2 now, and we think we should start evaluating if it's been effective.
So after the fact, they decided to evaluate?
Yes. So my heart just sinks.
Does that happen a lot? Is that a minority or?
I would like to think it's happening less because we're sending this message that evaluation doesn't come at the end. But sadly, sadly, there are some models that are out there that say, you know, you develop the training, you deliver it, and then you evaluate what happened. You know, what we like to say is create a plan, including what you're trying to accomplish and how you're going to know if you're on the way. And instead of measuring what happened, influence what does happen. Because then you're going to have some results at the end.
So build in some checkpoints to make sure you're at least in the right path to get where you want to go instead of
exactly.
waiting until you landed somewhere and hope you are in the right place.
Exactly. And some of the most successful initiatives we've seen actually started with some non-compliance or some trouble that they weren't even expecting. But the reality is what you just said, Lee, they had those checkpoints. So very shortly after their big event, they realized, oh my gosh, people are not truly doing this, or they're not doing it as much as we were hoping or as well as we were hoping. So they can quickly do some remediation.
Right. Some course correction to get back on track. But
absolutely.
So you've seen some things that have like a 1 to 2 year plan and they don't check until they're done. Is that true? That's not true.
You sound incredulous, but it happens all the time.
It's like, oh, I'm going to go to college every day, and then I think I'm going to be, you know, an accountant at the end. That I'm, you know, I have a degree in women's studies. You know, like, and I'm like, how'd that happen?
That's how this whole conversation started, right? You asked him about his office change,
right?
Well, and it does happen. You know, just think back maybe to the last time you attended training. Did anything happen afterwards?
Stone's in charge of training.
Not anymore, I'm not. I'm calling the Kirkpatricks in. Speaking of which, the work itself, you and your team, you consult, you speak, you train, but is that true? You do all those things?
That is true.
And she writes and she blogs. And she
goes on radio shows and all that stuff. But you're really committed to this idea of capability transfer, empowering the organization. And so you have this whole certification process around these disciplines as well, yes?
Yes, we do. And this is really something that if anybody's listening to this saying, boy, I just don't know if I can pull this off. The first step is the bronze level certification, which is either kicking off with a 2-day program or 5 online sessions. And we walk our own talk. You do pre-work, part of which is talking to your supervisor about what you want to accomplish from this training. And what we like about the program is during the program, you actually take a real program of your own and build the plan. So this plan where we talk about what's going to happen before, during, and particularly after the training, what are you trying to accomplish? What's your highest level result? You build that during the program. And to get certified, you submit the plan and we review it. And we review every single one and give it written comments and a letter grade. And, you know, if we say, hey, you know, we don't see a strong enough plan here, people then basically work on it and resubmit it. So you walk away from the program with a plan that you are ready to execute.
It's not hypothetical. This is a real actionable thing that can impact your business upon completion.
That's right. Jim Kirkpatrick says all the time that I'm level 4 and he's level 3 in our real life. And no way was I going to be part of a program where there was not a tangible result at
right.
the end.
Because a lot of this is art for art's sake, right?
Right.
And you're trying to kind of put an end to that. So everything is practical and productive and it's making impact.
Yeah, we've seen ourselves the power of training that actually works. And the training industry is at some risk of being replaced by things like, think about all the times where you go watch a YouTube video.
Right.
Or just go grab some instructions for how to do something on Pinterest.
Watch some TED Talks.
Yeah.
That's our training program. mm-hmm.
And sadly, for a lot of organizations, that's what is happening because they don't see the value in right. having a training professional because they're not doing these things.
Right. But you're uniquely qualified to speak to this because you were on the other side of the desk.
Mm-hmm. I was that person who thought I didn't need to have right. a training professional.
Right. So that's not a hypothetical for you. You've lived that. You felt how that feels. So you can mm-hmm. really empathize and understand how to create a solution that works.
I like to think so.
Well, the irony of this, if that's the right word, is a TED Talk could be marvelous center content for a module. It just needs to be wrapped in these disciplines. Right? I mean, then it could be extremely effective training, right?
Absolutely. You know, sometimes we get a little bit criticized when we talk about training because people say, oh, that's just Stone Age stuff because, oh, no pun intended. But, you know, they say, well, geez, that's just not what people do anymore. You do just go grab a TED Talks or a YouTube video. That's fine. You can put training in quotes. It's anywhere where you get the knowledge to do right. what you need to do. And we encourage that, you know, use this informal way that we all just use our digital world to get knowledge. But then to your point, you have to have that plan. Okay, so I'm going to watch a bunch of videos, but then what am I supposed to do? And what's going to hold me accountable to doing that and reward me when I do it or course correct when I don't? And what is the point at the end? What am I trying to get out of it?
Now, on this certification, again, I see advantages for everybody. I see advantages for the execs and the lines of business. I'm going to feel better about the whole operation if the people I'm entrusting my people to do the training, if they are certified, they're credentialed, and they're thinking about this, and they're going to follow these disciplines. And if I'm a training professional inside an organization, I got to believe that's better. For me, I have more, my stock's got to be higher inside the company if I'm, what do you call it, Kirkpatrick certified? Or is it?
Right.
If mm-hmm. you're Kirkpatrick certified. And then back to being an individual practitioner, you know, out there as a strategy consultant or whatever, To me, I would think this would give me almost an unfair competitive advantage. If you're talking to me and maybe one or two other potential strategy consultants that you might engage, I'm going to make it known somewhere in the course of that conversation, I'm Kirkpatrick certified. We're serious about delivering the results. So I'm probably not telling you anything you don't know, but I suspect that's why people flock to these certifications, right?
Well, thank you for your kind words on that. We have been really excited over the last couple of years that we've seen in job descriptions that they are now requiring Kirkpatrick certification for certain training positions for that very reason, that they think if we're going to invest in somebody who is a training manager or a director, they need to have this mindset that the training absolutely must increase performance.
Trainer, are you Kirkpatrick certified? That's the question to ask now.
There you go. So if somebody, if a company is having challenges in their training or not satisfied with the results or maybe reached a plateau in their training results, what's the best way to get a hold of you guys?
Well, we really encourage people to reach out to us. We love to talk to training professionals and help them. Our website is kirkpatrickpartners.com. And if you complete the free quick registration, we actually just counted the other week, we have over 100 free resources on our website. So wow. If people just want to read a white paper, watch a recorded webinar, you know, find out a little more about this, that is right there for them. And reach out to us too. Our number is 770-302-3500. If you want to set up a time to chat with us, get pointed in the right direction. We just, honestly, we hear all the time from training professionals whose jobs are being eliminated, and we just don't want to see that.
And is there one of your books that you would recommend as a first read to kind of familiarize yourself with the process?
Yeah, a good one is our newest book, The Kirkpatrick's Four Levels of Training Evaluation. We were super excited. It hit number one in the business training books on Amazon when it came out last fall. And Jim and I kind of joke, we put a little too much into this book. This book can really tell you how to do this and how to get started. Mm-hmm. So fantastic first step or investment for someone who's serious about really making their training work and frankly, keeping their job.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio this afternoon. Thanks so much for coming to visit with us.
Well, thanks. My pleasure. It's always fun to talk with you guys. You understand enough about this that, you know, I'm surprised you're not right there with us at Kirkpatrick.
Hey, listen, how about hanging out with us a little longer? We're going to visit with one more guest.
Yeah, I would love to. It's such a treat to be able to get some of my own training.
Fantastic. All right, Lee, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show this afternoon, we have with us the head of North America for GSMA, a wonderful person whom I believe I'm going to be able to pronounce the first part of her name, and I'm going to let her
first
take
it. First name, I bet, yes. Second name, maybe. Third name. I'm betting the under.
I may get the first one wrong because it could go two different ways. Anna?
That's correct.
Welcome to the show. Lean in there real close to the microphone and tell us about the rest of your name. And then let's have a conversation about
that
you and
fine.
Your work.
I'm Anna Tavares Latibudier, and nobody tries that last name, so it's okay.
Well, Anna, you're here to talk about GSMA, but first I would like you to share with our listener, what is the GSMA and how are you helping folks?
Sure. Thank you for having me. GSMA is a trade association. We represent globally the mobile industry. We have over 800 members worldwide, wireless carriers. So yours, AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile, plus all the other countries in the world. We work with them in order to make sure that services, when they're launched, they work everywhere. We want to make sure that consumers everywhere in the world can have a good experience and that things work. So when you cross the border and you pick up your phone and it still works, it's because we've worked for that to happen.
Now, Atlanta is the North American headquarters of the GSMA, which is a big feather in the cap for Atlanta. But why did you guys choose Atlanta as the headquarters when you could have picked anywhere in the country?
So we pride ourselves to want to be in the coolest, most vibrant
That was the right answer.
cities in the world. We like cities that commit to try to become innovative, you know, smart cities that really put investment and bring the community to make that happen. And mm-hmm. we believe Atlanta is one of those. So We've been here since 2006, but have made a very significant investment in the last year to be more committed to the city and to the region of North America.
Now, the mobile capabilities in America are not as good, I've heard, and then in other parts of the country. Is that true or false, or how are we doing as a
Atlanta or
just in North America? Is our mobile kind of where
yes,
we're at?
US is good? One of the best in the
one
world.
One of the best in the world? Yes. I thought some of the Asian countries are...
There's a quite innovative operators all over the world. Mm-hmm. US is leader in terms of innovation.
Uh-huh.
Coverage is always a big thing that is discussed, I think, here in the US. But you have to think that it's a very big country.
Right.
And there's a lot of places that don't have a lot of people. So, I mean, if you compare it even with Europe, in order to have the space that the US has, you'd have to have many European countries together.
Right. So I guess maybe that's where the misconception comes in, is that their populations are more kind of in one big pile. So it's easier to reach everybody. Where here, we're spread out and there's large portions of the country that is like just deserts and
that is
forests.
Correct. So sometimes it's very expensive to be able to cover, you know, a population that is very small. But there's been a lot of effort been put by all of the US carriers. And I think it's much better than it used to be. And I think in terms of innovation, I mean, US is in the competition to launch 5G to see if it's one of the first in the world, is a leader innovation in the Internet of Things space. And so it's very much ahead.
So mobility then is defined in a lot of different ways. It's not necessarily just your cell phone.
That is correct. So, it can be everything.
So what are some other examples of?
Not just cell phone and tablets, but it could be a car. It could be a
refrigerator.
Box,
I saw a commercial refrigerator. Tells you it's time to go get some more lettuce.
Is that true?
That is correct. Everything can be connected. Yes.
Wow. So that's happening pretty rapidly, right? Because that 5 years ago, your refrigerator couldn't tell you to get more lettuce, right?
That is correct.
So what are some of the other things that are on the horizon?
I think self-driving cars has been something very talked, I think, for a while now. We believe 5G will definitely be a technology that will enable that to happen.
Oh, so 5G, so these things go hand in hand.
Yes.
Okay, you can quit pretending I'm going to. What does 5G mean?
Well, there was 4G.
So there was 4G, there was 3G.
Oh, there was LTE, right?
The easiest way of thinking is think about speed.
Okay.
Yeah. So 5G will bring much more speed and will bring low latency. So
what's latency?
Think about have you ever had a conversation on WhatsApp? Or any other application on the phone when there's a delay.
Right.
Okay. That delay becomes much smaller in 5G. It's already really not, it can't be distinguished anymore in the normal ear.
Right.
Of a normal human when it's LTE and 4G, but it will be even bigger even less in 5G, which means that all those applications will be possible.
Well, it's like, you know, a couple G's ago, you couldn't get Netflix on your phone, right? That was like insane, right?
Yes,
right?
Yes.
That would be impossible. And then the other day I wasn't watching Netflix, but I was listening to a Dave Chappelle special on Netflix as I was driving, where I couldn't have done that a couple years ago, right?
So it becomes faster and the pipe becomes bigger. It means you can
more
have
data
more
can
data
go through.
Can go through.
And there's less of that latency or delay or buffer you know, that spinning thing. We don't see that
happen.
As often, right?
And I mean, it's really important for conversations.
Right.
And have you ever had a conversation where people continue to interrupt each other because actually the sound is not traveling as fast as.
So that's
as
a symptom
expect.
Of that.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Part
so
of
that,
it. Not all.
And we were
going to
fix it with training on listening skills. And it's all about the G's.
It's a latency. We have a latency problem. It's not a listening problem.
All right. Speaking of listening and hearing, though, this is an association. So you've got people coming together from competing companies.
Yes.
And they're all hanging out, yes, and they're all pitching in, working together for the good of the industry.
So we make the industry collaborate. We
get along.
The industry. And
wow, how did you crack that code?
We do it on the technology programs I was mentioning. So the future of communications, so the future of messaging, video, voice, all of that. We also do IoT, so Internet of Things. We're also working on mobile identity, for example, so that in the future, maybe you don't have to have all the usernames and passwords.
Amen.
And
wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let me know when you fix that.
But we also do it in trade shows. So we bring people together to make business, to do business in the telecoms area. And we have three big trade shows. The biggest one is in Barcelona, week after next, actually.
Fun.
Yeah. Starts on the 26th of February, brings about 108,000 people together in Barcelona for a week. The second one is in July in Shanghai, brings over 80,000 people. And last year, we launched our America's show in San Francisco last year. We'll be in Los Angeles in September, so 12th to the 14th of September. We're very excited about that show because we will hope that, you know, we'll really show the cross between the entertainment, media, content industry and the mobile industry.
Now, it's a very competitive industry, but you guys have figured out a way to get everybody to get along and
get
at these events. But that's an art. You can write a book just on that part of it. But it really is in everyone's best interest to get along, right? Because the more kind of similar ways of doing the work, then everybody can benefit. So that people aren't creating their own proprietary way of communicating.
Absolutely. And that's been very important since the very beginning of the Gs, the 2G. If you think about it, the scale is what brings prices down for consumers.
Right,
so
right.
The more things are done in the same way, the more manufacturers can, you know, do things in more volume. And that means that prices inevitably come down. So
and
that's
the consumer doesn't have to buy 44 devices.
Exactly.
And especially if they travel where, I need one for Europe, I need one for Asia, I need one for America. Exactly.
And if you remember a few years back, it wasn't for granted that you would travel to Europe and your phone would work.
Right.
Right.
You might have to get another SIM card or some sort of adjustment to your device.
Yes, sometimes are the devices.
Uh-huh.
We've done a lot of work also with governments and regulators to make sure that the regulations that are in place are conducive of the development of telecoms and they're in the best interest of consumers. So there's something called spectrum bands, right? That, mm-hmm. Mobile goes through them. It's the lifeblood of the mobile industry. And it's quite important that everywhere in the mm-hmm. world, there's some alignment on what bands are used for the different mobile services, right? So if that alignment doesn't exist, mm-hmm. if you remember the quad band, the tri-band, and for phones, before people were very... it was a very big thing to ask if it was a tri-band or quad-band phone. If there's no alignment between regulators all over the world, then it means it's much more difficult to make sure that services work everywhere. So we also do that. We work with regulators and governments to make sure that the environment is conducive
Well, it's working. I'll tell you, because I was going to leave my phone at home. My wife and I went on one of these Viking River cruises. Uh-huh. We've been watching PBS for years, and that's the commercial, right? So saved up our money. And it was just like at home. There was no difference at all. We had marvelous service up and down the river. Yeah, it was fantastic. Have you always been in this mobile arena your entire career?
So I actually started in private banking.
Well, of course, private banking.
It's mobile. A logical jump to telecom.
Makes perfect sense.
I did the private banking investment in new technologies. I didn't really like it very much. So I went into strategy consulting and did strategy consulting for telecoms for quite a while and then joined GSMA about 13 years ago. So I started actually in London in the headquarters and moved here to the U.S. about 8 years now.
And then your offices are here in Atlanta. And there are some events here in Atlanta too, right? That maybe aren't national events, but local events.
Margarita Mondays. Stuff like that.
That's a great idea. So we are committed to do more with the community here. We've launched our new office in January. We are a very big supporter of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. Mm-hmm. And so we will be doing things here in Atlanta that are related to that, particular for quality education and gender equality. Those are two of the goals that as a company, we will be doing things here in Atlanta to advance. And so far, you know, we're part of some of the local groups like TAG and
sure.
Wireless Technology Forum, and we participate in their events. And but I don't think we've announced any event yet, but we will.
Okay, so you're going to start doing some local, being
we
part
will.
Of some local events here in town.
I think the margarita one.
You like that? She wrote it down.
And then part of your mission, though, is to help obviously the telecom, but from an education standpoint, are you doing anything to help like younger the students or anything in the STEM or STEAM? STEAM is
yes.
the hot thing now. We had somebody in just the other day talk about STEAM, the
right.
what is it, science, technology, engineering, arts, and math.
That is correct. We believe that that's a big key. When people talk about getting more women in technology, mm-hmm. it has to start in education, right? It has to start in the beginning. And I think we need to kind of stop having stereotypes that there's certain subjects that are better for, you know, boys than for girls.
Right.
And so we are a very big proponent of making sure that education is equal and that everyone has the same opportunities. And last year, we did an event in London that we're hoping to bring here as well, of bringing girls together and teaching them how to code, mm-hmm. for example. And we believe that that's the future. It starts in the education and goes all the way through your career. But that's the first step, education.
Well, we work with the Women in Technology. I'm sure you're familiar with that organization. And they come here every month to talk about some of the initiatives.
You don't have
doing.
Anything to do with that show.
And when I say we, I mean
you mean Katie.
Katie
produces that show. Katie co-hosts that show. No, we're delighted to be a part of it. We just think the world of that crowd out there in Sandy Welfare and Patterson. And
right. And that work is so important. And there is such a disconnect for girls to, you know, they're consumers of the, you know, of all of the technology. But to be creators of it somewhere along the line, that just...
Yes. But if you think about it, I mean, our classrooms and education system have pretty much been the same for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And we have all new technology. Right.
We're not leveraging all the good, cool stuff we have.
We haven't even figured out how to use it. Right. So some people say it's really good to have tablets in school. Some people say it's not. And I don't think there's been enough data to actually analyze the impact and how you use it.
Well, I know somebody can help with evaluating that kind of stuff.
So, I mean, end of the day, I think it is important to know that there's, you know, new technologies and how to use it. And coding needs to be part of, you know, education probably since the very beginning, the same way as languages. And
right.
making sure that students are aware of all the possibilities of things that can be done, right?
Well, there's so many good jobs with these skills. It's silly
Absolutely.
To not have, I think women are only like 20 or 30% of the technology jobs right now. It's like, how are you missing this huge
portion? We're hearing that on the supply chain show.
Right.
They've talked about that in almost every episode. This topic comes up in the supply chain arena because it's not moving boxes around the warehouse anymore. I mean, there's a lot more to supply
right.
chain.
It's Yeah, and a warehouse today is not like a warehouse was, you know, 20 years ago.
Totally different. And I mean...
That's where your stuff comes in, right? Robotics
yes.
and all of that stuff comes in today's warehouse.
Yes, robotics, artificial intelligence,
right.
Virtual reality, all of those things are becoming more and more part of our day-to-day. A lot of people will have artificially intelligent home assistants.
Or right, like even home. Drones. Doesn't your work impact drones?
Correct. Yes.
Right. So it's like you're touching all these areas that may not be obvious. Like you might think, oh, telecommunication, what would they have to do with drones? But it's the communicating with these drones somehow, you know, wirelessly they have to communicate.
Yes. It used to be just a phone line to your home, right? When it was the wireline industry, and then it became the cell phone. And now it really touches everything you do in your life. Mobile, we have a theme in our shows, which is mobile is everything. I think was last year's show. And it is really everything, right? It touches everything you do from your healthcare, potentially, you know, your car,
your healthcare
sensors.
With the, you know, all these watches and stuff that transfer the data. You have to do it securely with privacy.
Yes, all of that is very important. Mm-hmm. So.
And then the expectation from the consumer is I want this information. I want to be able to do a transaction within, you know, milliseconds, but I don't want someone to steal my identity. So it has to be fast, but it has to be private.
A lot of people are counting on you, Anna. You better.
You can't screw this up, Anna. This is a big deal. But it must be so much fun because it's changing so rapidly. Like just when you think you're like, oh, that was the coolest thing I ever heard, then something else comes up like a month later. You're like, that's even cooler, right?
That is true. I mean, it's very interesting for us to be at the forefront of developments in the industry and knowing what's happening globally and being able. As we said in the beginning, of putting competitors together to work towards a common objective.
Goal. Yeah, that's
amazing. a really great thing we do. And, you know, we convene the industry in a great way.
Well, what do you need? How can we help you? I mean, we're helping you tell your story, but is there anything you need from the Atlanta community?
I think the more and more we're going to be, you know, starting to develop events and things here, you absolutely can get involved. We'll reach out in time, and I think we have something getting prepared for next month. So the woman, you know, getting together girls teach them how to code.
Absolutely, we'll connect you with our. I mean, I'm sure you know the WIT folks, but if you need to meet them, we're happy to make that introduction.
Yeah, no,
I will maybe get some of the young girls in the studio. How cool would that be to have a conversation with them?
That'd be very
cool. That'd be great.
I mean, if anyone wants to get involved, they can reach out to us.
What's the
website? So our website is www.gsma.com. So gsma.com.
Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thank you.
Yeah, and don't fall ill. Is there like a backup for you? This is important stuff. Have you got some redundancy plan in place?
We have a great team here in Atlanta now. So pretty sure we'll be well covered.
Well, I think we're very blessed to have you right here in our own backyard, and equally blessed to have you working so diligently all over the planet. And let's stay connected. Let's keep up with this crowd. And I'm quite sincere when I say when you're doing things like that, if there's some advantage, and in my thinking, there probably is some wisdom in having some people come from time to time to just keep us up. Things are moving so fast. Keep us updated with what's going on in the world. Yeah. Fun way to spend a Wednesday afternoon. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our producer, Katie Galley, our guest this afternoon, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.